Welcome to this week's episode of Time Added On. The international break is almost over and the busy festive period is almost upon us. Forest have six games in the run-up to Christmas. There's a fair bit to get through in terms of talking points in and around Forest. A lot going on in the Premier League, even over the last week and a half. First of all, Tom, please, please don't tell me you've got your Christmas tree up. So many people I was either out with at the weekend or have spoken to in the last few days have been telling me that their tree's up, the lights are up, they cannot wait. I, as you know, love Christmas. Cannot wait for Christmas, ready for it, but my tree's not up. It's too early.
No, my tree's not up. I still need to buy it, but I'm
well,
very
probably
tempted.
Why it's not up.
Yeah. It's up. It's up somewhere. It's up in shop.
It's up somewhere, yeah.
But I am tempted to put it up this weekend, and I'll tell you my rhyming reason. Because I'm going to be having Christmas at yours. God help me.
You are.
R.I.P.
You are.
And I'm thinking, at least I get my money's worth out of it if I put it up this weekend. I'm not buying a tree and putting it up for a week. Do you know what I mean?
So I can see where you're a man. Likes a bit of value.
I'm getting one that's in the sale as well. I'll tell you that we're out in the sale.
The 3rd of December is early enough for me, but no, it's brilliant. It is good. I love this time of year. It is great fun. It's a lot of fun to be had. The next few weeks from a football perspective look absolutely awesome and bonkers in equal measure in terms of the fixtures and the games that we're going to. But it's just nice to have this, though, because obviously we had the World Cup last year and it was good, but it's not the same, is it? Festive football. Football and Christmas, they basically go hand in hand, don't they? And it's going to be brilliant. Slightly gutted we won't be able to make it because of logistics. We won't be able to go to Newcastle on Boxing Day. But given the 12:30 kickoff...
If you were more committed, maybe we could.
I'm not going from Southend to Newcastle for a 12:30 on Boxing Day. That is for sure. But it's good to. And we were just chatting before we came on. I'm a celeb, so there's been plenty to watch while there's been no football on. We should say as well, actually, we are a little bit gutted from a footballing perspective because it didn't quite go the way that we would have wanted it from a Welsh point of view. Although our very own Nico Williams did score a brilliant goal last night. Wales are going to have to do it the hard way through the playoffs. So it's not been the best international break, but. Celebs back, so it's something to watch in between all this football. So,
you've been watching loads of Bluey as well, haven't you?
Loads of Bluey. One way or another. Right, let's move on quickly. I wanted to start off talking about something non-Forest related, actually, because I think it shapes up. It's going to form pretty much all of the narrative, or pretty much most of the narrative, you would think, this weekend in the Premier League. And obviously, we play them the week after in Everton, in the form of Everton at the City Ground. Obviously, in the last week or last few days, really, Everton have obviously had a 10-point deduction for breaches of financial fair play. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that in terms of, does it alter the landscape for Forest? I don't want to go into the whys and what fors and whether the 10-point sanction is strong or not, because obviously I don't, followed it from afar. You see the headlines, but we haven't seen all the detail. But does it change the landscape for Forest and the rest of the teams down there at the moment? Or from our own perspective, is it just business as usual? Obviously, we've benefited. We've gone up a place in the table. But it's an interesting subplot now, isn't it? And do you feel like this one's got a fair bit to run in the tank still? It's not over, I don't think, this 10-point deduction.
No, I mean, I think it's business as usual to the point of, I was going to say something really obvious then. It's business as usual because I think it probably affects the teams more within that. Your newly promoted teams is what I'm hinting at there.
Yeah.
In terms of, mixing it up a little bit. I still think Everton will be all right, if I'm being honest. I don't think they'll go down. Whether it has a bit of a mental effect on them, I know this comes into question all the time when it comes to stuff like this, and people go, well, they should be strong enough. But it's only like anything. If something really big happens, if something really bad happens at your place of work, people do talk about it, and it does have an effect on people and the way that they might approach things or the amount of effort they're putting in or what's not. So it'll be interesting in that respect. I think for Forest, it should still be a judgment case of, if Everton didn't have that points deduction, where would Forest be in the table? Where would be they placing themselves? That's the way that I'll be looking at it anyway. I know football, like the points that are on the table are the points that are on the table. And, you know, the table doesn't lie, as everyone says. But I think in terms of the season, if Forest aren't to go down, and I'm not saying Forest are safe yet, because there's a lot of ballsy articles out there saying, yeah, Forest are safe, but this, that and the other. But, you know, if we are seeing this as a season of growth and progression, then for me, I'll be judging it on if this season was a normal Premier League season and there wasn't the points deductions. And I also think if it was a Premier League season that had, I know it's an odd thing to say because it's not again, but if it had a Leicester, Leeds, Southampton, rather than a Luton, Sheffield United, Burnley, where would Forest be placing themselves right now in that Premier League table? So I think in terms of mentality, or like terms of, you know, looking at it in terms of the bigger picture, I think that's the way we should look at it. But I think in terms of actually what that points deduction does, I think it probably ruffles things up a little bit with those newly promoted teams and giving them a bit of hope and giving them a bit of a carrot, if you like. And Everton maybe looking over their shoulder, obviously, because they're in the bottom three, well, right joint bottom. But I actually do think Everton will be okay still.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, joint bottom, that is the way to look at it. I mean, Everton have done really well in recent weeks. I mean, they've picked up some good form, they've picked up some good points, particularly away from home. So Sean Dyche, after a rocky start to the season, Everton were really poor at the start of the season. Sean Dyche is doing a pretty solid job, as you would probably expect at Everton. The fact, therefore, that they've had a solid start, and they've had 10 points taken away, and they're still not bottom of the league, albeit they are joint bottom, but they're not bottom of the league. They are only a point, 2 points off safety, is a really, a damning indictment as to how poor those three teams at the bottom have been, haven't they? And I think you're right, it will give them hope. It's another team that have been brought back into the mix, and Everton would have been, Everton were above Forest by a point. And Everton would have had a similar narrative to us in the fact that, you know, if you can get a good, I suppose, points return between now and Christmas, you put yourself into a really good place. I think it'll be a low total that's required. I think you're going to probably be around the 30 mark, maybe 31 mark to stay up this year. We'll probably keep you in the Premier League, which is really low. Not unheard of. Obviously, last year was a bit of an anomaly, in all honesty. So it's going to be that level. I'm not saying that Forest should be, keeping their either shoulder, but I think the way we've talked on this pod in the last few weeks is you've got to get that done first and foremost, then you can start to look above and consolidate. And I think Forest have just got to, over this next few weeks, and we'll talk about it in a minute, they've just got to get those points on the board so that actually they go into the new year and they go into that January transfer window, then they can reassess what they do. Because I've read a couple of things today about Forest, and perhaps they're now looking at reversing out of what they were planning to do in January, because it's almost as those teams in mid-table are kind of saying, well, is this about consolidation and we'll go again? I don't think Forest are there yet. They definitely need that run of games. But back to Everton, I think it does bring hope to those teams, but ultimately I think Everton are all right. I think if Everton were going to get the points deduction, this was the year to get it ultimately, because I think there's still enough in the tank for Everton to get. You know, if Everton win this weekend and the bottom three don't, then they're out already. Do you know what I mean? So it's crazy in reality. And you look at the fixtures this weekend, Everton's got Man United, but they've got Man United at home. What I think you might find with Everton, it gives them a bit of a galvanising effect. I know what you're saying in terms of mentally, will it scar them, and will it actually, they feel like they've just pushed out of it and they're back into it. I actually think it'll do something similar-ish to what happened to Derby, in the fact that, it was all about it's us versus everyone else, and it's Everton versus the Premier League. The difference between the Derby situation and the Everton situation is that I think Everton actually got a decent squad of players. So they'll have a decent squad of players, and that galvanising effect, you can imagine what Sean Dyche is drumming into those players this week. So it's going to be...
He was probably drumming it into them before. Which is why they probably
everyone
not
knew
he
was coming, right?
Yeah, exactly. And if anything, for the Premier League, it's the perfect storm, because they get to make a point, as they usually do about these things, making an example of Everton. I'm sure there's loads that, look, they did break the rules, but I mean, as you said at the start, we could talk about this all day, but it's a perfect storm for them, because they can punish someone and make that statement, but actually it's on paper at this moment in time, it doesn't look like it might affect them that badly to the point where you're destroying a club almost, or like not destroying a club, but you know, putting them in a more perilous position. So it's perfect.
No, I think you're right. I think you're right. Look, let's park that there. I thought it was an interesting topic for us to start with, because I think it does ultimately affect that part of the Premier League that we're in, and I think it does make it interesting. I think it makes the game next weekend as having a little bit of extra spice, and I think that's got the hallmarks of a classic anyway, in terms of 5:30 under the lights on Sky, Everton at home. It's going to be brilliant. But it just adds an extra dynamic. The second point I wanted to touch on, and we talked about this a lot, obviously, on the last pod, and it's fair to say I wasn't overly happy on the last pod following that West Ham. I'm going to call it a collapse, but you know what I'm trying to get at. It wasn't necessarily a collapse on some levels that we've seen, but it was definitely Forest throwing away a couple of points. We had a really good email, actually, over the international break from a regular listener, Steve, and he just made a couple of really good points that I just wanted to pick up on, Tom, and chat between us. So he said within his email, in relation to Forest's latest capitulation following on from the last pod, he's been thinking about what's happening to the team in those moments of collapse. The conclusion he's come to is that in certain moments we're lacking leadership on the pitch. He's old school. His opinion is that the armband should go to a leader. It's generally a centre back or a centre midfielder. He goes on to say he's not on Morgan Gibbs-White case, but you know, he's got all the ability, and he's definitely obviously a crucial part of that team. But is he a leader in crucial moments on the pitch? Now, there's a lot to unpack within that. And we'll touch on the leadership debate first before we talk about Morgan Gibbs-White specifically, because I actually want to pick up on some of the points that we spoke about last time round. I think from a leadership perspective, Steve Cooper doesn't believe in just one captain, does he? He's talked at length about he's got a leadership unit that's made up of 4 or 5 pros that actually the players within the squad select. They have a vote. It was actually quite interesting when Steve Cooper talked about this. But they have a vote. They have almost like a mini election of who is in that leadership group. And that is the core group that then helps set the fines, set the tone on the training ground. And ultimately, the armband then can swap players quite frequently on the pitch. And we've seen that, right? Gibbs-White was the captain last time around. But Joe Worrall is the club captain. He's worn the armband. Serge Aurier has worn the armbands. Mangala's worn the armband. You could go on and on and on. Multiple players have worn the armband. So I don't think Forest's problems in that West Ham game and perhaps the Luton game, if we hark back onto that one, was necessarily about who's got the armbands. I think there is probably something in there in terms of lack of concentration. And maybe you do want some loud voices at the back and in midfield. I think centre-back's an interesting one, because I think Murillo, is a young lad, but I think his leadership qualities in terms of how he's approached things have been absolutely brilliant. Niakate, has been a captain elsewhere and is quite vocal. And Willy Bolly and Joe Worrall as well, they've all been vocal. I think perhaps that at the back, it's been about pairings not playing together so regularly. You think about Murillo and Niakate, they've not played that many games together. They're trying to get used to a new keeper behind them. I think the midfield three, Mangala doesn't strike me as the most vocal. Dominguez over time will probably, but again, he goes about his work really well. Sangari is obviously captain previously of PSV. He's obviously adapting to the club, adapting to the Premier League, adapting to the language. So I think over time, I've got no issue from a leadership point of view. I think it's just maybe lack of concentration more than anything. And I think from a Morgan Gibbs-White perspective, why wouldn't you give him the armbands? Because whatever you say, whether he's in form or not, and we can debate that till the cows come home, he is your figurehead, if you like. He is the player that Steve Cooper is moulding this team around and building this team around, and he is arguably your most talented player. So I've got no issues. And people lead in different ways. It's not all about shouting and screaming. This is kind of modern-day football now, and I think Morgan Gibbs-White leads by example in his own right, and we saw that, in certain glimpses. Arsenal at home last year, Brentford at home this year. He might not be a screamer, but he puts his, he puts his all in, he tracks back, he puts his butt on the line when he needs to, and he's obviously got the flair going forward. So I've got no issue with Morgan Gibbs-White wearing the armbands. I think it's more about a collective leadership group at Forest more than one individual.
Yeah, I think I agree with Steve in some respects. I think I think there's probably, there's a difference in there between having leadership in the background and having leadership on the pitch within 90 minutes. And I think, taking what you've said there, I think Forest have a lot of good personalities, which is so, so important. I think that's what Steve Cooper wants. No real bad eggs. We've seen it before where bad eggs have maybe come to light or come to the forefront and have quickly been shoved to one side. He doesn't really, you know, take any minutes on that at all. He's very quick to just go, no, not for me, thank you. So I think that's really important to have that in the background. And I think that's what Forest have. You know, when you're talking there, I think, you know, let's not forget Moussa Niakate is a captain material. I think the one thing that we've got in terms of a 90-minute match is we don't have a lot of that when you're not playing a Worrell. Yates to a push. You know, they are obviously the club captain, vice captain. Worrell as captain of the club, you know, I'm not saying he should be playing just because he's a captain, but obviously he does that role quite well. And I think when we're talking about previous examples, you do think of a Joe Worrell, you know, in the Championship. You're talking about your Paul McKenna's, which everyone talks about, again in the Championship. And I suppose what Forest have had to do since they've got promoted is they've had to bring in people from many different clubs from all over the world, and those players have had to adapt, which has probably watered down their captain qualities, if you like, to a certain degree, because there's potential language barriers, not for all of them, but there are potential language barriers for some of them. I think for Sangare, for example, that is a perfect example. For Niakate, I don't think that is too much of an issue, but I think for Niakate, it's more the adaption of the Premier League. And can you truly trust someone to be a captain within a 90-minute match in the way that you want to be when they're still having to adapt to what's going on around them as well? And I think, you know, I think that's almost where the issues come. I think there's a difference between leading by example, which I think is what Forest have a lot of. You know, I think you can even look at Serge Aurier as an example there. For me, he wouldn't be my captain, but I can understand why he would be given the captain's armband because of what he's done in the past, and I suppose how he's putting himself about as a kind of a role model, older member of the group kind of character that he has done. So there's that role, you know, leading by example, which I do kind of prefer that method myself. But then there is an actual leading by the shouting and screaming or by your voice and being the loudest person in the room, which is probably what many captains do in terms of those 90-minute match. The Morgan Gibbs-White one is a really interesting one because when we saw that he had the captain's armband, the one thing both me and you said was actually this could be perfect for him because not because he's this kind of player, I've said this before in a pod, not that he is someone who purposely will disappear in a match. And obviously we've seen some of the stats that have come out in terms of he is Forest's most creative player, definitely. He's still one of the most talented players in the Forest squad and probably one of the most talented players we've seen in a Forest shirt for some time. The problem you have when you're playing in the role that he does is that if the game's not allowing you to come into games frequently, you do get lost in a game. That's you know, the difference between being the absolute top level of his position and being, you know, the other end of the Premier League, is that you do get lost in some games, or you will at least appear to be lost, even if you are top of the stats in terms of creativity for that team. You will appear to be lost, and I think my thinking was having the captain's armband might stop that. But I do understand what Steve's saying in terms of, well, actually, is he the kind of player that you would, I suppose, stereotypically put the captain's armband on as the most creative player in the team? We've seen it with other top level players, to be fair, you know, when they've been given the freedom at a younger age within that role and then maybe have been given a captain's armband later on in their careers. You know, I suppose swing it around a little bit. Harry Kane gets the captain's armband. It doesn't really affect him. I'm not comparing Gibbs-White to Harry Kane, but you see what I'm doing there. It's just... Yeah. Yeah. It's a difficult one. And I suppose if Gibbs-White is to keep the captain's armband, it's one that we've then got to see that growth for him to have.
And I think other players will come into it, though. I think that goes back to my point. I think we do have... I do think we have leaders of potential in the ranks. And I just think it's... The more they play together, the more they get that understanding. I think over time, you might start to see more of that organisation coming through into the fore over this next kind of month and a half. They're going to need that. But I still think, you know, the partnership at the back, let's say Murillo, let's hope Murillo is fit, by the way. Let's say Murillo and Nyakate continue to be that pairing for the foreseeable. I think they will start to build that understanding, which will then make them more commanding. Their communication will get better. They'll be able to organise at the back. The keeper will start to understand more. I think there's enough in it. I think they're fine. But I do get the point. I understand the point. And I think Morgan Gibbs-White, there's a lot of criticism or a lot of speculation around Morgan Gibbs-White at the moment. Well, speculation is the wrong word, but a lot of chat around his, you know, form and set-piece ability. So I think there's just a spotlight on Morgan Gibbs-White currently, which is tough. From a Morgan Gibbs-White perspective, set-piece-wise, obviously we talked a lot after West Ham. Obviously, Paul Taylor wrote the article in The Athletic since, you know, his set pieces are actually up there as some of the best in terms of creating chances in the Premier League. Forest just aren't getting on the end of it. Has your opinion swayed at all in the last couple of weeks on that? Or would you still be looking to mix it up and bring in perhaps someone like Toffolo into the mix and just maybe Morgan Gibbs-White not taking every single set piece and just having a bit of variety? That's kind of probably where I'm still at, even though I thought it was a good element of debate from Paul Taylor.
No, yeah, I mean, I'm still of the opinion that Morgan Gibbs-White should still have a part to play in set pieces and delivering. I don't think that was necessarily the main argument from people. I think the argument is, why not try something different from time to time? You know, other clubs don't necessarily just have one person doing the same thing over and over again. And I do think a lot of it does come from there should be a lot more threat in the box or whatever it might be. I think from a corner, we're talking different from, you know, corners to free kicks, right? Corners, I do think there should be more of a threat in the middle of the park for kind of the physicality and the height that Forest have within their team and the players that have shown what they can do from set pieces from their previous clubs or whatever it might be. There should be more of a threat from Forest from those set pieces. And naturally, the first point, you know, the finger pointing will go towards who's taken the set pieces, but I do think there has to be more of a, you know, more work going on those set pieces and more of an awareness from those players in the box. The free kicks is a different thing because I think I do think, you know, that is probably an area where you can go. There needs to be a bit more creativity and a bit more wider thinking when it comes to free kicks. Are there players within that Forest squad that we think can mix things up? It doesn't have to be, you know, Gibbs-White can still take a free kick, but we see it with other clubs. There's multiple free kick takers, maybe apart from, you know, we're talking Ward-Prowse at West Ham, which, you know, when you lose the game the way that they did and that Ward-Prowse was the part of it, that's naturally the comparison that people are going to make. But actually, a lot of other clubs, they might mix that up. So is there players within this squad that we think could take a better free kick than Gibbs-White? Now, that's hard for us to say, you know, completely without A, analysing every free kick that maybe one of the other players took at their previous clubs, but also seeing what they do in training. But can Forest do something there to mix it up? I think the corners, I don't have too much of an issue with personally. It is, you know, can Forest be more of a threat from a free kick? Do they have someone with a bit of a magic touch or at least someone else that just gives that option to mix things up and make the opposition think a little bit more?
Yeah. Well, let's see this weekend what comes. But there's definitely room for improvement in that area of the pitch. But Steve, brilliant email. Thank you for that. There's obviously some good points within that. Keep sending them in. Say everyone, we've had some brilliant emails and some feedback. So yeah, it's great to get some just different opinions and thoughts that we could talk about, obviously, especially in these international breaks. Where
that email was the most detailed, best opinion I've heard, rather than all the episodes we've done of this podcast together, Chris. That's
what a review. What a review. Right, let's talk about games. Let's get back into the actual action. As we said, the next run of games is extremely important for Forest. It can really kind of set the tone, if you like, for the second half of the season. Forest have got six games in the run-up to Christmas coming up. Games against Brighton, Everton, Fulham, Wolves, Spurs and Bournemouth. Four of those six being at the City Ground. Obviously, Tom, a huge opportunity there, huge risk also if obviously things don't go for Forest. Obviously, apologies to put the quite somewhat of a negative slant on it. But what is your head at? I mean, they look like, you know, we've talked at length how certain run of games have seemed difficult for Forest this season. On paper, this six look to be okay.
Well, Yeah, I was about to say there's been run of games before earlier on in the season that I would have said exactly the same thing, and Forest didn't get necessarily the points that I would have hoped for. So I'm hoping, you know, this one is slightly different, I suppose, because the slant I'll put on this one in comparison to the others was, I suppose, we're looking at a run of games before where you're playing teams that are at the bottom that we expect Forest to beat. And I suppose what we've said before is, can Forest perform a little bit better against those teams? Not necessarily that they're not expected to beat, but maybe might not play as defensive-minded or sit in as much at home. I mean, at some point you would think, if you're the opposition, that actually you might just do that, even if you are mid-table or top half of the table, because it seems to be what Forest struggle with. So you might just try it yourself anyway. But I mean, the game's coming up. Brighton, everyone, obviously, they are. I mean, in terms of their growth as a club and as a team, they've done exceptionally well over the last couple of years. And Roberto Zerbi's done an amazing job, and they've got some really talented players. I mean, I look at this one in a similar vein to Palace away, not as much, I suppose, because I thought that Palace team was completely decimated, but they are having some injury problems at Brighton, and they're not necessarily the best version of themselves right now that we've seen, well, especially last season, and maybe yeah. That's something to do with the extra games and they're playing in Europe. And they obviously have European games coming up as well, I believe just after they play us, so they might have one eye on that. And you know, trying to get players fit and not risking players too much, let's see what happens. I mean, it is probably a good time, is I suppose is what I'm trying to get at, to play Brighton in comparison to other times in the season. And at home, and two home games in a row, let's not forget yeah. that, you know, Brighton. And then this Everton one, which is a really interesting one, because we're talking about an Everton team we just spoke about there. We don't know what mindset they're going to be in. Are they going to be, you know, pulling the punches, or are they going to be a little bit frail? Are they going to be a little bit mentally weak in comparison to the Everton we know under Sean Dyche? But I think
that's the one. Sorry, yeah. So I was going to say, that's the one out of those two I think is the harder one, Everton. Yeah, I think they're a team that Forest, the type of team that Forest didn't do that well against them last season. Obviously, we managed to get a 2-2 in the end. But you can see them being, they're tough for Forest to break down.
Yeah, and I think the important detail though, Chris, is it's two home games in a row. Like, I know yeah. I've said all season we can't keep on banging the home form drum, but we are kind of getting to a point again, I think, where we are having to do that a little bit again, and rightly so, because the home form is brilliant, even if, you know, we've drawn a few games. You know, the home form is what keeps Forest standing still to this very day. And you know, regardless of people complaining about atmospheres not being as good as this, that and the other, the home form is still keeping Forest very much alive and progressing. So I think two home games in a row is so important. I mean, I know you're saying, I think Everton could be the tougher of the two as well. We'll see if we're still saying this after the Brighton game. But I actually think that there's something quite poetic about a late Saturday night kickoff to play Everton at home.
I know what you're saying. The away games after that, though, are quite interesting. Wolves are obviously a pretty good act this year, actually, under Gary O'Neill. And I hold my hands up. I'm quite surprised in that. I think Gary O'Neill did a brilliant job last year at Bournemouth, but it was one of those jobs that you thought perhaps he did a good job because he came in on a caretaker basis and just kept them going all season. Could he go away and do it again? And I think he's done really well. Not a rocky-ish start, but a patchy start. But they are quite a formidable team now at Molineux as well. I mean, beat Spurs last time out there. So that's tough, but not one that Forest will be massively fearful of, if you know what I mean, in terms of, you know, Forest will respect Wolves, but it's not the same as going to City. And then I think Fulham as well will be an interesting one just straight after that, midweeker. I think Fulham are they're in a real difficult patch at the moment. Chances are that they could lose their star man in Polini again. Chances that he might go to Bayern Munich with them knocking on the door again in January. So they're in a bit of a weird phase as well. So actually two away games there that you look at that you think Forest might go and get something. And then you come back to the City Ground with another doubleheader pre-Christmas, which is absolutely phenomenal. Spurs on a Friday night, which again is going to be great under the lights, and Bournemouth. And, you know, Spurs have been outstanding at the start of this season, but there's no doubting at the moment. They're going through a bit of a rocky patch after a couple of bad results. Now, this is still 5 weeks away, so I'm not suggesting that Spurs will be in that sort of form, and it will be a tough game. That's the hardest game in this mini run, if you like. But you wouldn't put it past Forest to do something against Spurs on that Friday night. And then Bournemouth home is looking at the Bournemouth, how they're faring so far this season. You'll be looking at that as a great opportunity. So I think it's a good run of fixtures. I think there's opportunity in there. There's obviously some, there are some tougher aspects of that run as well. But if I had to say to you now, what's a good point? What's a good points return from those six going into Christmas?
Six. I mean, I'm ambitious in that. I am hoping for 6 points out of six from the next two. And then I look at the two away games after that, Fulham and Wolves. I think Fulham are quietly, almost in some respects, they're going under the radar for not being anywhere near as good as they were last season in some respects.
Absolutely,
I know people have said, oh yeah, they're not doing great, they're out of form. I don't think people have quite realised they are where they are in the table, and actually they are very much a team that are quite easily this season going to be sucked into the trouble, because they don't have, apart from Paulinho, I don't think they've got enough at all within that squad. And they've got a manager, albeit I think he might have signed a new contract recently.
He did sign a new contract, yeah.
Yeah, we can all sign a new contract and still be unhappy, do you know what I mean? So I think that he isn't necessarily 100% happy. So I still think there's a lot bubbling away under the surface of Fulham, and I think there's a possible something that Forest can get at Craven Cottage on a Wednesday night. Wolves, I do think that'll be slightly difficult, and it upsets me, because at the start of the season I thought they'd be right down there. Spurs, I mean, I was tempted to send one of my mates a picture of a slide the other day when they lost, because I think we'll see a different Spurs to what we've seen at the start of the season. I think it was always going to come. So who knows there. And Bournemouth, I would like to think Forest can win. I mean, I would like to think we could get, I don't want to be too ballsy, to be quite honest, let's say 11 points, 12 points. Is that too ballsy? 3, 6, 9.
I was going to take 10. 10 right. Felt to me quite positive. But I think Forest can get
it. I've gone one ahead of your 10. I'm just slightly more positive than you then. Fine.
I think Forest can get it. I think Forest, out of the three games in Brighton, Everton and Bournemouth, should be looking to pick up 2 wins out of those. I think Forest could look to pick up another point against the one they don't win. And then it's about, can they go on the road? Let's just say Spurs, we'll just be sensible and we'll just say, look, Spurs will be tough. If they can get something, a point from that, then brilliant. Right.
Yeah, point. That's what I said. Yeah.
Point. But I think Forest have got it in them to go to Craven Cottage and get a result. I really do. I really do. I agree with everything you said there about Fulham this year. I think they're a good, still, you know, they're still a decent side. They're not, you know, one of the weaker sides in the Premier League. But I fancy Forest to be able to go and do something there. So I think 10 would get you to 23. And then that's 23 after 18 games. You'd look pretty. If Forest can get 10 points before Christmas, they would look quite well set, you would say.
Yeah, definitely. I just always think that this kind of, basically being as strong as you possibly can going into that kind of winter break, if you can, it's just good for confidence to be, you know, assuming you get that points tally, you would probably widen the gap even more between yourselves and the bottom three. And you know, I'm not saying that's then job done, but I think that would get you to a point of being able to look slightly less over your shoulder and more what's in front of you without getting too ballsy and too confident.
You're confident tonight. I like your style. I like your style.
It's the winter break, to be honest. It's really revitalised me as a person. But it's interesting, isn't it?
The whole season has a bit of just a different feel about it. I know obviously last season was new to us. We had the excitement. But you had it's quite condensed last year because of the World Cup.
I almost think that we've, you know, we said about how much the club and the team have got to adjust to the Premier League. I think as a fan base, we've had to adjust to the Premier League, because quite, naturally, when you are a team coming up and you are going to face more defeats than you win games, and you're going to go through periods where you have to suck up the fact that not everything's going to look rosy, and you're going to go through peaks and troughs. That's what happened last season with Forest. They went through some really good runs, but large periods either side of those runs, they, well, to be honest, they were shit. And I think that's something we've had to adjust to, really. I'm not speaking on behalf of every fan, but I definitely think for myself anyway, where you can't get too down on the lows, if you like. You can't get too high with the highs either. I think that's just naturally when you're trying to get to that mid-table of the Premier League, you are going to have to expect setbacks. And yeah. I think we've had a couple of setbacks over the last month, but I actually still think the fact that Forest are where they are, they can take confidence from that into a run of games that I actually think might suit them a bit more than the last run of games where we looked at and went, they should get X amount of points.
I was quite emotional after the West Ham game, but I have time to calm down and reflect now. Maybe it's my old age that allows me to be more reflective, but it was... there's a lot of positives. I mean, we did say on the pod, masked by my anger and disappointment, but there were a lot of positives to take out of West Ham. And I think, obviously, building on the positives that we saw against Aston Villa the week before, I think there's a lot to like about Forest at the moment. I think it's just about getting points on the board now, isn't it? And turning some of those part performances into kind of 3 points and making sure that Forest just keep chipping away at that tally to push them into that kind of mid-table position that they want to be in this season. So there's a lot to like, there's a lot to enjoy. I'm really looking forward to this next run of games. I mean, let's talk about Bright. You've kind of already touched on a lot of things I was going to say, so I'm not going to dwell on it. Obviously, Brighton last year at the City Ground and towards the end of April was an unbelievable result. It was one that was probably a little bit against the odds, well, very much against the odds, and kind of really sparked that revival that ultimately the run that kept us up towards the back end of last season. It did come at a good time last season as well. Brighton had just lost on the in the semi-final of the cup on penalties. So timings-wise was great. You've said there, you've touched on the fact Brighton have got a lot of injuries and they do go to Athens next Thursday in what will be a huge night in their Europa League group. So they've got a bit of an eye on Europe next week. The likes of Welbeck, Solly Marcher, Stupinan, Welbeck, Dunk, and potentially Ferguson all out this weekend. Big players, starters for Fulham. They've still got the likes of Matoma to come off the bench. So they've still got enough players, you know, they've still got enough talent in that starting 11, even without those, that's the state of their squad now. They're playing in European football. But it's a good time to play them. They drew 1-1 last time out at home to Sheffield United. They've had draws against Fulham and Everton in recent times in the league. They did obviously beat Ajax at home in the Europa League last time out in that competition. But what do you make of Brighton so far this season? They've almost become that, you know, if it's not Palace, it's Brighton. Everyone's kind of uses them as a bit of a yardstick as well now. They were unbelievable last year after Potter left and De Zerbi came in. Obviously, he became the new poster boy of managerial talent, if you like. And it's been a bit of a hit and miss start for them, really, this season. A lot of people talking about Brighton perhaps struggling with the doubling up of the Premier League and Europe. Injuries obviously don't help, but is there a danger that Brighton could somewhat underachieve versus last year this season?
Yeah, I think they're almost similar to Newcastle, but level below. Do you know what I mean? I think
the Europa League version of Newcastle, yes.
The Europa League version of Newcastle, and to the extent of everyone's pointing at the fact they're playing European games as the reason for their downfall, and, you know, point the finger at myself for that one, because that's what I said earlier as well. But I think, but I'll even argue with myself on this pod. But
You can put you in a phone booth and argue yourself.
But
after a few pints, but anyway.
But I think with them, it's also they just don't have the depth anymore, and people are forgetting the players that they sold this summer, players that were so, so important for them. Yes, they still have talented players in that squad, Matoma being one that will probably be the next big one to leave, if you like, or Evan Ferguson next summer. But you know, they've just had a bit of a weird start. I think they started off well. They stuffed Wolves. They beat Man United. They beat Bournemouth. But then they got tonked by Villa 6-1.
Yeah.
And then I think since then, albeit they've not been on a like a slide as such, they have gone a little bit downhill. Yes, they have beaten Ajax. But you know, they've had a draws in games they probably should have won, or they would have thought they should have won, you know, against Fulham at home, Everton away, Sheffield United very recently, where they were down, they had sending off. So they're a really weird one, and it could be that this international break is exactly what they needed to revitalise themselves, just like myself. But I almost think in some respects that, albeit they've had that break, they're now coming out of the break, and they're looking at their injury list, and their heads are still down. So they're a really weird one, and I think it is partly to do with the European competition, but I also think they've left themselves a little bit short and maybe got a little bit ahead of themselves in some respects. But I don't think there'll be a club struggling this season at all. I just don't think they're a club that you look at to the trickiness of last season.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It's difficult, right? Because coming into this one, what do you do if you're deserving? You know that you know, the state of the Premier League this year, Brighton will still make the top 10, right? They'll make the top 10. If you've got players returning from injury, do you put them in for this one, knowing it's going to be a difficult away game? Or do you give them an extra few days and save them for the trip to Athens, where you know, actually, if you progress in that competition, that could be, you know, if you progress in that competition and finish ninth, let's say, that's still a good season for Brighton, right? So it's a tough conundrum, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because they flip it on its head a little bit and they've got Chelsea away straight after Athens, and you go, well, here's an opportunity to pick up 3 points. They will see it that way, I would suspect. Going to play Forest, there's an opportunity to maybe get 3 points or a point. And then we play Athens, and then, you know, you've got Chelsea away, Brentford at home. And, you know, yeah, they've got Burnley sandwiched in the middle of it, but they've got Marseille, Arsenal, Palace away, Tottenham at home, West Ham away.
Palace away?
Just before Christmas on the 21st.
Ooh, Merry Christmas.
So, yeah, Merry Bloody Christmas.
That's a weird derby, but let's not go down that rabbit hole again.
So it's almost, apart from Burnley, you almost look at this as an opportunity as well. I agree with you. I think it's an odd one how they'll approach it, but that I almost see that as a positive for Forest. They don't know how they might approach it. They're kind of doing the okie cokie. We know how we're going to approach it, and we'll know probably that hopefully most of our team is back from injury. So I know there is still a couple of question marks from the international break, and maybe even at the international break. But I think Forest will know mainly who is available, and that'll be a majority of the squad. And therefore, they'll know how they're going to approach the game at home, as they always do.
Yeah, I agree. That's why I asked the question. I think it's definitely a plus for Forest, this one. I think even if there's any sort of doubt or decisions to be made, I think that plays in Forest's hands. Lots of people have talked about everyone else's injury problems this season. No one's really picked up on the fact that Forest have had so many injuries. And there is a little bit of concern coming into this one, obviously, with the likes of Awoniyi pulled out of international duty, and obviously Murillo from West Ham. We're not quite sure yet. No sort of real update, which I don't know if that's good or bad, given the way Steve Cooper likes to talk about injuries. But they would be the two doubts. Potentially a bit of good news in the fact that you would hope that Callum Hudson-Odoi would be close to a return, if not for this one, in the next couple of weeks, certainly in the run-up to that festive period. So, all being well, it looks as though, as you say, Forest should have a relatively strong squad to pick from. In terms of how we approach this one, we know it, right? We know what Steve Cooper's going to do. We don't really need to talk about it, but we will, because that's what we do. But it's going to be a 4-3-3. The team that he picks, let's just presume, and let's keep everything crossed, that Murillo and Awoniyi fit, because they are two pivotal players for us, right? But the starting 11 pretty much picks itself. Even after Danilo coming on at West Ham and doing a really good job, I can't see that midfield three being broken up. And a Gibbs White, a Langer and a Awoniyi front three ticks all the boxes at the moment, doesn't it? Even if Callum Hudson-Odoi is back.
Yeah, I think the general shape there's probably a couple of question marks over people, you know, whether people come back from injury or what's not. You know, I think the general shape and the way that they'll approach it will remain. It is just the injury thing. I mean, I would put my money on Awoniyi being fit enough to play this one, and that he's been called back mainly out of precaution. And I would put my money on Murillo being fit. I mean, look, the bloke can climb up into a nice restaurant in Paris near the Eiffel Tower to propose to his girlfriend, now fiance. So, hey, if you can do that.
They do have a lift. You're fit enough. Have a lift.
Well,
but I won't be using it.
If you're fit enough to do that, you're fit enough to snap a Brighton player, as far as I'm concerned, Sunshine. So, yeah, I'm not too concerned about the potential injuries. And I think Forrest will come into this near to fully fit.
Near to fully fit and unchanged, then, you would suggest, from West Ham. So, Odyssey's in goal, Aina, Nyakate, Murillo, Toffolo, Dominguez, Mangala, Sangare, Gibbs, White, Alanga, Awoniyi. Done.
Yeah, I suppose the only question mark.
It's nice. Go on, what's your question mark?
It is whether he would be willing to throw Hudson-Odoi in if let's say he was fit a couple of weeks back, and we've been keeping him wrapped up in cotton wool because of his history, probably more than anything. Whether he would potentially come in, it's all speculation because we don't have a Scooby and Steve Cooper don't help us. But I wouldn't be surprised if that was to happen. And, you know, the forgotten
tough
man.
Tough on Alanga, because I thought he's
still not a bad player. So.
It's tough they'd be tough on Alanga because I thought he was one of the bright sparks of the Villa first half and for West Ham, he took his goal really well. But yeah, I agree, he might throw Hudson-Odoi. Nice problem to have, though. Definitely an option that Forest need in terms of another body in that final third. The favourite January transfer window is just around the corner. It already talks about Forest being after another striker, another winger. You could probably see why when, you know, you start to think about squad depth, there is definitely lacking in that final third. That's probably where we've left ourselves a little exposed, but you're always going to have areas of the team that you want to build up and add to in January, don't you? Got to give Forest something to do in January.
I'm going to let you into a bit of a top Tom Denman scouting secret. I bought the new FIFA the other day. It's not called FIFA anymore, FC24. And first positions were striker, two wingers I got actually, and a centre back, and a left back.
I don't think we need a left back. I think we're all right for fullback.
I think in January, I think you are looking at a winger. You are looking at another striker because I think Forest are just short of quality. There's rumours I saw on the way home today about Origi potentially going back. I mean, wouldn't shock me. I think
you're in for a centre half as well.
They're probably happy and well stocked in central midfield. I think it's your attacking options that I feel like once Forest get one injury, you feel like they barely have any options all of a sudden, or good enough options. So it is that winger, that striker, and probably a centre back if Felipe doesn't play for Forest.
They played Huddersfield last week, didn't they? Behind closed doors, 1-3-0. Felipe played. Might be interesting. He could make the bench this weekend. That would definitely be a big boost. Rumour is he could be off to Olympiacos. Who knows? That's another subplot that we didn't talk about, but we're running out of time, about the Premier League teams voting against not being able to loan players from sister clubs. And obviously Forest are one of the Rebel Seven that voted against that. But we'll maybe touch on that when we get closer to the window. Give us a score prediction for this one.
I'm going to go 3-1 Forest.
Oh, that's a good one. I'm going to go 2-0 Forest. 2-0 Forest. Forest will win this. It'll not be a comfortable afternoon. They'll
Chris
probably write their
Chris
long.
Chris Wood will score. Chris Wood will score.
Woody's going to get one.
Put your money on it.
put your house on it. Not before Christmas. I think Brighton will be still tough, even if they come with the injuries and suspensions that they have. I think Forest will probably ride their luck at times, but I think it'll be back to winning ways. And a big 3 points on Saturday. I'm looking forward to this one. It's going to go. We're going to try and get up there against the Christmas market beforehand, so we get into the old festive spirit pre-match.
I'll steal one of the trees from there as well.
Yeah, exactly. Right, let's leave it there. I enjoyed that. It's nice to be back. 8 international break. I've been into too much time on my hands. I've taken golf up. It's not good, is it? It's not good. But anyway, let's move on. As always, you can email us at timeaddedonpod@outlook.com. Give us a follow on X, formerly known as Twitter, at timeaddedonpod. And please, obviously, follow us on Spotify, Apple, leave a review. It really does help. It's fantastic. So, yeah, that's it. That's all from us. Hope everyone enjoys the weekend. Hope everyone is going down to the City Ground as a good one. Let's hope for 3 points. Come on, you Reds.